Tantor Audio presents One Deadly Night. A State Trooper, Triple Homicide, and a Search for Justice. By John Glatt. Narrated by Gildert Jackson. Prologue. Perched on his commode in a tiny 6 by 8 foot jail cell, David Cam stared down a fly on the ceiling. Then, slowly aiming his catapult, he fired, dispatching a soggy paper missile to score a bullseye, and as the fly fell dead to the ground, he raised his shackled wrists and gave himself a celebrative high five. In better days, the former highly decorated Indiana state trooper and expert marksman had been an avid deer hunter, but now, chained up in solitary confinement in a southern Indiana maximum security jail, David Ray Cam had invented a sport he called pretend hunting. In place of a bow and arrow, he used a rubber band with chewed-over candy wrappers as ammunition. So far, on this cool mid-March morning in 2004, the boyish-looking, muscular, 6-foot-tall ex-policeman had killed 3 flies. It was a new record, and he had triumphantly asked his father to mount their bodies on a plaque as a trophy. 72-year-old Donald Cam had smiled, promising to do so. But as he left the cell, wiping a tear from his eye, he was still unable to believe the real-life nightmare that had engulfed his family. For 40-year-old David was serving 195 years for the cold-blooded murders of his beautiful wife, Kim, and their 2 little children, 7-year-old Brad and 5-year-old Jill. It was, said Prosecutor Stan Faith, a crime almost beyond comprehension, as he believed, though he could not prove it, that the ex-trooper had also sexually molested Jill just hours before the September the 28th, 2000 bloody massacre in his garage in Georgetown, Indiana. David Cam and his family had always vehemently protested his innocence, claiming he had been playing basketball in a church hall when the murders took place. Besides, he had the perfect alibi, with 11 witnesses testifying under oath they had been on the court with him the entire night. But in 2002, a jury had not believed him and found him guilty of killing Kim, Brad, and Jill. A superior court judge had sentenced him to the maximum penalty, making him eligible for parole when he turned 143 years old. Everything changed in September 2004, when the Indiana Court of Appeals unanimously overturned the guilty verdict. 3 appeals judges criticized the judge and prosecutor, ruling that a substantial amount of the evidence used against him at trial was inadmissible. On November the 5th, the Indiana Supreme Court refused to reinstate the convictions and threw the case back to Floyd County, where new prosecutor, Keith Henderson, planned on retrying David Cam in late 2005. But everything changed when, in March 2005, another man, ex-con Charles Bonet, was arrested and charged in the case after his DNA was identified on a sweatshirt found at the crime scene. At first, Bonet denied any involvement in the killings. But prosecutors now say that Bonet has admitted being at the Cam house during the killings, although they also say Bonet claims it was Cam who was the actual killer. After dropping the original charges against Cam and issuing new charges against him, Keith Henderson now plans on trying Cam and Bonet together as co-conspirators. Meanwhile, the question remains, who is the real David Cam? Is he an innocent man, wrongfully convicted after suffering an unimaginable tragedy, or one of the most cold-blooded murderers in American criminal history? 1. Roots. David Cam's family, traces its ancestors back to the 14th century and the legendary Scottish crusader Sir Simon Lockhart, who carried Robert the Bruce's heart into battle in the Holy Land. As the custodian of the key to the casket that contained Bruce's heart, Sir Simon was later honoured by having his name officially changed to Lockhart, later abbreviated to the modern Lockhart. One of his illustrious family's most treasured possessions is a bound volume called Lockhart Roots. It proudly bears their coat of arms, consisting of a lion, a cross, and a sword, meaning defenders of Christian freedom. Written above is the family's motto, Corda Serrata Pando, Latin for I Open Locked Hearts. In 1683, Captain James Lockhart carried the family's name to America when he and his sons settled in Virginia and prospered. They made their money transporting new immigrants from England to Virginia. The Lockharts lived in Russell County, Virginia, for the next two centuries, becoming frontiersmen. They were the first of a tough breed of pioneers who moved south, forcibly taking large areas of Virginia away from the Native Americans. They had such fear of God in their hearts that it left no room for fear of man, wrote David Camm's maternal grandfather, Amos Lockhart, in his 1989 self-published family history, When We Were Young. Short in material goods, they were long on faith. They were taking God at his promise. Amos's father, John Patton Lockhart, also known as J.P., was born near Honaker, Virginia, on May the 7th, 1881. At the age of 24 in September 1905, he married Elizabeth A. Thompson, who bore a son, Swanson Banner Lockhart, exactly 10 months later. On January the 9th, 1908, David's grandfather, Amos H. Lockhart, was born, and 3 years later J.P. started his own ministry and began preaching all over the South. In 1916, J.P. moved his wife and children into a small train station in Artrip, West Virginia. And over the next few years he became a traveling minister, preaching on horseback through the mountains of Tennessee and West Virginia, and setting up numerous ministries. "Nothing stopped him," Amos wrote. "He kept going, hardly knowing the future results." J.P., who had 13 children, relied on collection plate proceeds at his revival meetings or the goodwill donations afterwards, where he could expect live chickens, canned goods, or bacon to feed his growing family. As Amos and his brothers and sisters were growing up, they were constantly on the move as the family crisscrossed the South on revival tours, where J.P.'s mission was to convert people to his self-styled version of Scottish Presbyterianism. During their many trips all over the South, J.P. and young Amos would camp out in a tent and live rough. Amos's father always carried his Bible, striking up conversations with any strangers they met. "Soon they would know he was a preacher," wrote Amos, "and soon he was invited to a home or homes to sing, have prayer meetings, and preach. What I liked about these religious services was the good woman home-cooked meals." In the early 1920s, Amos was a strong, strapping teenager, and he and his friend, Holly Bloomer, lived the hobo life, looking for work. Sometimes they jumped freight trains and got into many mischievous scrapes during their various adventures. "We were not murderers, nor the worst of people," Amos later wrote. "Neither were we saints." In 1929, 21-year-old Amos moved to New Castle, Indiana, where he worked on the inspection line at the Chrysler car factory. But after losing his job in the Depression, he moved to Boyle County in Kentucky, where he met a tobacco farmer's daughter, a beautiful blue-eyed blonde named Daisy B. Belcher. Just 15 years old, Daisy, whose family was originally from Germany, was one of 7 children, and her parents struggled to put food on the table. By the time 21-year-old Amos met Daisy, he had dated many nice, respectable young ladies, but soon after meeting this Belcher damsel, they married. Looking back on his November the 1st, 1930 wedding, more than 58 years later in his memoir, Amos would quote chapter 18, verse 22 of the book of Proverbs, "Whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing, and obtaineth favor of the Lord." Amos and Daisy would have 9 children, starting with a son, Carlin, who was born on December the 28th, 1932. Just over 2 years later, on February the 4th, 1935, David Cam's mother, Delpha Susie, was born. And over the next 20 years, Daisy bore a further 7 children, Leland, Nelson, Gloria, Sam, Phyllis, Kathy, and Deborah. The Lockhart children always had a strong family bond, looking after each other in business and helping any member who might fall on hard times. Years later, this would be put to the test with David Cam. Delpha Susie's first memories are of the countryside around Danville, Kentucky. When she was a little girl, she attended her grandfather J.P. Lockhart's church, where her father was also a lay minister. "My father did everything you can think of," she remembered. "He sold insurance, he sold Bibles, and he worked in the coal mines of eastern Kentucky." The family lived on a small farm, and Amos would travel to wherever the work was, once moving his dutiful wife and children to the Blue Diamond coal mining camp for a year. Delpha Susie, who dropped her first name as a young child, went to grade school in Junction City, Kentucky, with her older brother and sisters. In the early 1950s, Amos worked for Southern Railroad, finding a job as a fireman on the Louisville to Danville run. Eventually, he found full-time work as an engineer with the L&N Railroad, based in Louisville, moving the family 50 miles northwest across the Ohio River to New Albany, Indiana. New Albany is a true slice of Americana, lying directly across the river from the more cosmopolitan Louisville. With just 15,000 families living there, the town embraced small-town American values, with everybody literally knowing everybody's business. New Albany rests on the banks of the Ohio River, which the early French settlers first named La Belle Rivière, meaning beautiful river. Even today, it has little in common with the 21st century, moving at its own pace with little thought of the outside world. Before the French and English arrived in the 17th century, this scenic part of southern Indiana housed many Native American tribes, including the Wyandot, Miami, Shawnee, and Potawatomi. During the American Revolution in 1778, General George Rogers Clark led an expeditionary force across the Ohio River, capturing 3 key strategic forts from the British. 5 years later, in recognition of the part he played in winning the war, the New Virginia legislature awarded Clark and his men 150,000 acres of land, which today houses Floyd and neighboring Clark counties. Since General Clark and his ancestors began settling southern Indiana 2 centuries ago, the Ohio River has shaped the area's economic and cultural development. Throughout the 19th century, steamboats glided along the river past the growing city of New Albany, bringing hordes of tourists to gamble. And in 1875, the first Kentucky Derby across the river in Louisville put the whole area on the map. But in January 1937, disaster struck when heavy rain caused the Ohio River to break its banks, inflicting millions of dollars in damage on New Albany and its neighboring towns of Clarksville and Jeffersonville. To prevent another costly flood, a network of flood walls and levees was completed in 1945, and some years later, an even more ambitious $8 million flood wall was constructed around Louisville. To this day, Floyd County is a rural throwback to a time when American life was simpler and far less commercial. It boasts many unspoiled 19th-century farmhouses and Greek Revival-influenced churches around, as religion plays a crucial role in the life of Floyd County. By the time the Lockhart family arrived in 1954, Susie was an attractive 19-year-old girl. Like the rest of her large family, she attended the New Albany First Church of God and sang in the choir. Soon after joining the church, Susie befriended another choir member named Margaret Cam, who was 2 years her senior. "It just happened that I borrowed a suitcase from Margaret to go to my brother Leland," said Susie. "Donald Cam was there, and I was introduced." Don Cam was a handsome 24-year-old U.S. Air Force flight engineer who was flying Typhoons out of Guam during the Korean War. Don's father, William Cam, hailed from Liverpool, England, having migrated to America in the late 1920s when he was 24 years old. A couple of weeks after they met, Don had to return to his base in Massachusetts to complete his 4-year service. On his release, he returned to New Albany. "He asked me to marry him," remembered Susie, "and we were married on February the 9th, 1956. The newlyweds moved into a small house on the rural fringes of New Albany with several relatives as neighbors. Don found a job as a mechanic with a chemical company called B.F. Goodrich, which made an assortment of rubber products, including car tires. Susie became a homemaker. 1 year after they married, Susie became pregnant, and in 1958 their first child, Donnie, was born. 3 years later, a daughter named Julie followed, and then, on March the 23rd, 1964, at Floyd Memorial Hospital, New Albany, David Ray made his entrance into the world. 2. Dirt Boy. Almost as soon as he could crawl, David Cam would wander outside his parents' house to play in the dirt. The little blond-haired boy loved nothing better than amusing himself at the back of the house, digging holes and making roads. "Dave insisted on digging in the dirt," remembered his mother, Susie. "He'd play by himself for hours." His elder sister, Julie, remembers how Dave stood out from the other children as a fiercely independent loner. "Growing up, he spent a lot of time outside," she remembered. "He was the quietest of us all." When David was 1 year old, his parents had a third son, Daniel, to complete the family. Then his mother found a job selling furniture in a local store, so a babysitter was hired to care for David and baby Daniel during the day. All the Cam children's lives revolved around the Georgetown Community Church, one of the many churches that David's grandfather, Amos, had founded over the years. "That was real important," said David's brother, Donnie. "That was a very big part of growing up." Every Sunday morning, Susie Cam would dress up her 4 children in their best clothes and drive them the 10 miles to the small church on State Road 64 outside Georgetown. In the afternoon, after the service, David and his many cousins would play together in the fields. Then they'd go their respective ways to spend the evening with their parents.
"The family is very close," said David's sister, Julie Hoag, "especially because my mum has a very large family. We were very proud of who we were as a family, my grandpa, my aunts and uncles, and my cousins."
The Lockhart family patriarch, Amos, then in his early 60s, built a special playhouse for all his grandchildren in the garden of his house on Lockhart Road in Georgetown. Affectionately known to his family as Papa, he had purchased the road a few years earlier, inviting members of his family to build houses on his land, naming it eponymously.
"Our cousins were like our brothers," explained Julie. "It went way beyond our nuclear family."
Don Cam was soon promoted into management at B.F. Goodrich, so in 1966 he moved his family into a larger house on Housefelt Lane in New Albany, where he and Susie Cam live to this day. In those days, Housefelt Lane was still very rural, but now it has been developed by industry. "There were a lot of cows and pastures and woods to play in," said Donnie. "We had a rural upbringing with bicycles, mini-bikes and go-carts, and playing in the creeks, the trees and the woods."
A friend of the Cams owned a filling station, and his little nephew, Sean Clemens, sometimes played ball with David Cam, who was a couple of years older. Growing up, the boys went to the same schools, becoming friends. Over 30 years later, their lives would often intersect, with disastrous results for David. The Clemens and Lockhart families went back several generations, and one of Sean Clemens's uncles helped build Amos Lockhart's Georgetown Community Church, whose current pastor is David's uncle Leland Lockhart. They were two big families who grew up on McDonald Street in New Albany, said David's aunt, Debbie Tavree. Sean's family and our family were very close. A few weeks before David was due to start at New Albany Elementary School, he had a serious accident on his bicycle. The injuries to his kidneys resulted in the highly dangerous viral infection mephitis, which caused his heart to enlarge. Mephitis, which can also be caused by strep throat, attacks and damages the membranes in the kidneys that allow blood to flow through and can disable them permanently. It takes months of treatment for a patient to recover. David was hospitalized for 4 weeks and then had to spend a semester at home being tutored.
"It had gotten in through the skin," said his mother. "The doctor thought he had gotten it from his bicycle accident."
David missed most of his first year of elementary school, and when he eventually was well enough to start classes, he had difficulty reading and writing and was way behind his classmates. David's small, spindly writing leaned backwards.
"He had a little problem," said Susie Cam. "They didn't know it was dyslexia, but I could see it."
Although he was academically challenged, David was a natural athlete and an excellent basketball player. Growing up, Donnie took special care of David, teaching him how to fish and going on long nature hikes with him. Every summer, the Cam family spent several weeks in a cabin on their Uncle Ben's spread in Jefferson, Indiana. "This was probably the biggest activity that we did as a whole family," said Donnie. "It was very secluded. There was fishing, and you could swim in the lakes, too, and there was a boat." Little David loved the outdoors, and it was here that he learned to hunt deer, although his mother maintains that the first time he went hunting, he could not bring himself to shoot his bow.
"He said, 'It looked at me with his big brown eyes, and I couldn't shoot it,'" remembered Susie. "He was so tender-hearted."
David was also close to his uncle Sam Lockhart, who was just starting his foundation repair company, United Dynamics Incorporated, which would end up employing many members of the Lockhart family. "Actually, when he was 3 or 4 years old, I would take him on dates with me," remembered Lockhart. "He was such a pleasant little kid, smiled a lot and always laid back." Sam was also impressed with the boy's natural mechanical ability, which he had inherited from his father. "He would like to do things and put things together," said Sam, "that type of little kid." When he was 8 years old, David came home one day and told his mother he wanted to be a church minister like his Uncle Leland.
"Mama, I want to be baptized," Susie remembers him saying as he clutched his Bible.
According to his mother, Dave was very serious about dedicating himself to God by always trying to be a good Christian boy. But the other important influence on his life was his Uncle Nelson, who served 12 years with the Kentucky State Police before ending his career as a lieutenant with the Jefferson County Police Department. As a young boy, David questioned his Uncle Nelson about law enforcement and the criminal cases he'd worked on. Then he would daydream about one day becoming a policeman and capturing the bad guys. When David was in the third grade, he began having acute migraine headaches, which would go on to plague him throughout his life. Susie Cam says migraine headaches run in the family, and she suffers terribly, as did her mother Daisy.
"When he was a little boy, he started having headaches," said his mother. "But then I noticed his face began to sweat, and his shoulders and all. You could tell something wasn't right."
Susie called in the doctor, who prescribed painkillers, but the migraines persisted, only getting worse.
"He'd just lay down in a dark room and lie quietly," said his mother. "It was the only thing he could do." Every morning the four Cam children would board the school bus outside their front gate, taking Donnie and Julie to New Albany High, Dave to junior high school, and little Dan to elementary. Slowly, Dave made progress at school, but he would never get the top grades his brother Donnie did.
"Dave was an average student," said his mother, "getting B's and C's."
His sister Julie remembers Dave always having to struggle to keep up with his classmates. For years he appears to have had an inferiority complex, until he became a state trooper and finally gained some self-confidence. But his natural athleticism made up for his academic failures, and he was on New Albany High School's basketball and football teams for several years in the late 1970s. He could also be very charming and made friends easily, although he always seemed to distance himself from people.
"He was very popular and well-liked," said Donnie, who always felt protective towards his kid brother, "a leader among his friends. But he probably would not have run for school council, just because I don't think those kinds of things were important to him."
Donnie describes his brother as reserved and extremely quiet. He would never strike up a conversation unless somebody spoke to him first. "He didn't stand out in a crowd or call attention to himself," explained Donnie. And the teenager had little experience with girls, as he was too shy to initiate conversations. While other boys went out on dates, he worked in his garage, taking car engines apart and then reassembling them. "I think he gets that from my dad," explained Donnie. "David was able to build engines, build cars, do bodywork. It was pretty natural. He just had a mind for those things." One of the Cam's neighbors, Lisa Souders, first met David at New Albany Elementary, where they were in the same class. She remembers him as a handsome boy with a good personality who largely kept to himself but had a distinct air of mystery. "He'd come over to my house every now and then," she said, "but nobody was ever allowed to go over to David's house, though. It sounded like his parents didn't want other kids over there."
3. First Love. At the age of 15, David Cam was an automobile fanatic with his heart set on owning a Jeep. To pay for it, his Uncle Sam helped him get an after-school job working for the South Side Inn in New Albany, owned by one of Sam's ex-girlfriends. Every day after finishing school and on Saturdays, the enthusiastic teenager would wash dishes and serve food at the canteen-style restaurant, which specialized in deep-fried chicken.
"Dave really wanted a car," said his sister Julie. "Actually, it was before he could even drive."
Eventually, he had saved up enough money to buy an old second-hand Jeep and immediately began renovating it. He enjoyed working on it so much that he enrolled for a high school course on auto body repair at the Prosser Vocational Center for a couple of semesters. In spring 1982, David graduated from New Albany High with mediocre grades. His graduation picture in the 1982 New Albany High School yearbook, Vista, shows him dressed in a tan jacket, a long-collared white shirt, and a striped tie. With his full head of dark brown hair neatly parted in the middle and a knowing smile, David looks inscrutable and aloof. After leaving school, David had little trouble turning his talent for fixing up old cars into a paying job. He found work with a local dealership called Cole's Body Shop, but soon left for a better job with Carriage Ford in Clarksville, a few miles down the road. "When he did body work, he was a perfectionist," said his brother Donnie. David, now 6 feet tall, was a grease monkey, coming home most days with his overalls spattered with spray paint from the cars he worked on.
"His hands were always rough and dingy from the spray paint that he used every day," recalls his sister Julie. "He was pale and thin, weighing all of 140 pounds.
According to his mother, at 18, David still secretly dreamed of following in the footsteps of his grandfather Amos and Uncle Leland. He wanted to become a minister. But all his hopes of a church career were dashed when he finally lost his virginity and got a local girl pregnant. Tamara Lynn Zimmerman had just graduated Floyd Central High School when she first met David Cam through her brother. A month younger than David, she was a slip of a girl with red, curly hair, looking far younger than 18. They got on well and...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?